to be well with your health. I'm Shanna, and we're back with another episode of the Adventist Healthcare and You podcast. I have a special guest filling in today that I'm super excited to welcome, who's been on the podcast before, but infrequent, but I'm happy to have her back. Tina, welcome.
Thanks, Shanna. It's so great to be back.
Let's first introduce Dr. Chen. Dr. Chen, you are an interventional cardiologist, a chair of cardiology at Shady Grove Medical Center, and then a medical director of the cardiac catheterization lab at White Oak Medical Center. Welcome. We're glad to have you back.
Great. Thank you for having me, Shanna.
Tell us a little bit about your background and how you help patients.
Sure. So I grew up in Columbus, Ohio, and my dad was a cardiologist. With that, I always had an aim towards possibly becoming a cardiologist. Although, as an aside, it's a little funny. In fourth grade, I remember my dad asking me, what do you want to be when you grow up? And fourth grade, Columbus, Ohio, home to Ohio State Buckeyes. So I said, I want to play football for the Ohio State Buckeyes. And if you know my size, I would have gotten crushed on the football field. So with that, yeah, I became a cardiologist. Did my training at Cleveland Clinic, 3 years of general cardiology, 2 years of interventional cardiology. Finished up in 2006. And joined Dennis Friedman's group, Cardiac Associates, at that time. And since then, I've been with Cardiac Associates, which in 2022 became part of Adventist Healthcare. As an interventional cardiologist, I do procedures in the hospital, taking care of heart attack patients if they need stents. That is, we fix blockages with balloons and stents to open up the blockage. And then I also see patients in the office, mm-hmm. Not just interventional cardiology patients, but general cardiology patients too.
Okay. Well, thank you. You've been a long time member of Adventist Healthcare as part of Cardiac Associates. And we've come to you a lot over the years to talk about heart health. So we very much appreciate your expertise and being part of the Adventist Healthcare family. So thank you.
It's my pleasure.
All right. Let's get into it. What overall would you say about the role genetics play in heart health? We talk about genetics a lot when it comes to cancer care and other types of things, but what about for your heart?
Genetics definitely plays a role in heart health and heart risk, but genetics is not everything. So I think it's a combination of your genes can increase or decrease your risk for heart disease, say coronary disease or other heart entities such as arrhythmias or heart failure. But then, say, speaking of coronary disease specifically, other factors such as the usual risk factors for heart disease, smoking, diabetes, high blood pressure, lifestyle, that plays a role too.
As somebody who has a family history of heart disease, one of the things I'm curious about is how far back do you have to look and be worried? And if you have heart disease running in your family, what can you do?
So as far as how far back to look, certainly the further back you can go, the better. But I would say most patients may know back to their grandparents, sometimes great-grandparents, and that's probably adequate, you know, for most things that we're looking at. And if you do have a family history of heart disease, what can you do? Well, the most important thing would be focusing on your lifestyle to address those risk factors for heart disease. You can't change your genes, at least for the most part, not yet. We're talking
not yet.
Exactly. So it's really making sure you're at a healthy weight, exercising, avoiding diabetes, watching your blood pressure, watching cholesterol, the traditional risk factors for heart disease.
It's not like if you have heart disease in your family, you're not destined to have a heart attack. Is that correct?
Correct. Yes. You can definitely play a role and change that course, change okay. that trajectory.
Yes. So knowing it can help you prevent it. That's what's important here is if you know your family history, then you can do a lot to reduce it.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. So with your family history, you may be at higher risk, but it's not 100%, okay. as you're pointing out.
What is the connection between genetics and specific heart conditions like arrhythmias or heart failure? Is there any links?
Yes, definitely. So one very well-studied link is between arrhythmias, say something called long QT syndrome, and genetics. And with long QT syndrome, it's an entity where patients may have sudden cardiac arrest. And that's been linked to several genes, but three genes in particular. Two genes affect the potassium channel in the heart and one that affects the sodium channel. And that probably accounts for the vast majority of these long QT syndrome. A different arrhythmia, one that's more common, something called atrial fibrillation, mm-hmm. which I think we've all heard of.
AFib, right?
AFib, got it. So AFib, there's definitely a genetic link to AFib as well. Heart failure entities would be something called a dilated cardiomyopathy. And that's, say, heart failure not coming because of heart blockage in the arteries of the heart, not coming because of thickening of the heart muscle. The heart just dilates, and often there's no real reason. And that has a genetic link, too, to something called the TITAN gene. And the Titan gene is a gene that encodes a protein in skeletal muscle and heart muscle. So when there's defects in that, that can result in heart failure.
Some of these things that you're talking about, are these some new discoveries when it comes to heart care, or have we known these things for a while?
I mean, I'd say we're always finding new genes associated with cardiovascular disease entities. And so some are newer, some have been around for a while. But okay. You're right. So for instance, comparing like some of what we knew, what we know now about Gen X compared to, say, when I was going through med school, which it's a vast world different.
And how are you testing patients to understand, do they have these genes and what risk they have because of that?
Right now, I'd say in community medicine, genetic testing is not being used extremely commonly. Occasionally, there are patients who are very interested in their genetic profile and want gene testing. And so then, you know, we do order gene testing for them. Say, for instance, a dilated cardiomyopathy, someone with heart failure you can't find a cause for, someone maybe on the younger side, we may order gene testing there to see, are there any genes for heart failure that are contributing to them having heart failure? But also another common time, at least in community medicine, where we may order gene testing would be for hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. And that's a condition where you have thickening of the heart muscle. And with that, there's also disarray in the muscle fibers in the heart. And when that happens, then heart can become thicker. It's hard for blood to be pumped out of the heart. And sometimes they're prone to arrhythmias and sudden cardiac death too. Hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, that probably is probably the most common genetic cardiovascular disorder in about 1 in 200 people to 1 in 500 people. And that's often when you hear like athletes having sudden cardiac death, that's probably the one to think of. Okay. And so when someone were suspicious for hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, then we can run a panel on, say, hypertrophic cardiomyopathy genes, try and confirm that diagnosis or move perhaps away from that diagnosis.
So it sounds like if you're maybe outside of the typical risk factors of age or there's some other indication of a problem that doesn't align with those risk factors, that might be a case in which you use a genetic test to kind of get deeper into the cause.
Right now, yeah. Although stay tuned because there's a really interesting type of test called polygenic risk score. That may be applicable more to the general population as it gets used in clinical practice more often. And what polygenic risk score is looking at your whole genome, and then rather than just looking at the effect of one gene on one disease entity, they're looking at like hundreds or thousands of genes. And each of those genes can play a little role, but you sort of calculate that risk together through sophisticated models. That can then give you sort of a risk for heart disease, for diabetes, for high blood pressure, for high cholesterol.
This might be a strange question or maybe not. Is all of this, the more you know about your risk and the percentages, is it almost the more you know, the better? Yeah. It can scare people.
Right.
So what's your thought on that one?
My thought on that is that for the majority of patients, I think the more you know, the better. It's mm-hmm. better to be informed. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because it comes back to what you were talking about earlier. Well, I know I have a high risk for heart disease. Am I predestined to have a heart attack?
Yeah.
Where I would argue strongly, you're not predestined. You can definitely do
yeah.
something about it.
But yeah.
Key here be, if you know you have high genetic risk, then you want to be even more proactive.
More proactive.
In your lifestyle changes, in your risk factors.
Okay.
And that does go further into, so for instance, this polygenic risk score.
Mm-hmm.
With that, you might find out you have a high genetic risk of coronary disease.
Mm-hmm.
And so right now there's certain risk models which help us determine who should be on a cholesterol medicine from the American College of Cardiology. And in general, the threshold is, hey, if based on your blood pressure, your cholesterol, your age, you have more than a 7.5% chance of having heart attack or stroke in the next 10 years, then you should probably be on a cholesterol medicine. If it's below that, then based on the American College of Cardiology guidelines, you don't necessarily need to be on a cholesterol medicine. What that doesn't integrate, though, is the family history, the genetic component of things.
Mm-hmm.
And so I could definitely see in the future, probably in the near future, integrating the polygenic risk score or some other genetic assessment with this risk model to then try and see, to possibly reclassify people.
Gotcha.
So for instance, you know, someone may have, based on traditional risk model, 3% chance. But then if you integrate the genetic part of things, that risk may go up some. And so then they may say, hey, I actually do want to be on a cholesterol medicine.
Dr. Chen, your team, the cardiac team at both hospitals, Shady Grove Medical Center, White Oak Medical Center, national recognition for the work that you've done for many, many years. Same thing with our stroke team. There's a correlation there. Can you talk a little bit about that relationship between the risk for heart disease and the risk of stroke and how you work with patients to prevent both of those things?
Yes. Heart disease, coronary disease, is essentially plaque building up in the arteries of the heart. And stroke, one of the main causes for stroke would be plaque building up either in the neck or in the brain vessels. So if you think of the blood vessels in the body as a systemic entity, then when you have plaque buildup in one vascular bed, say the heart, you're at higher risk for plaque buildup in other vascular beds, say the carotid arteries. And it's well studied that patients with heart disease, coronary disease, have higher chance for carotid disease, blockage in neck arteries, and also have higher chance for blockage in the legs, peripheral arterial disease. And that's really because a lot of the same factors that drive coronary disease, diabetes, high blood pressure, smoking, that cause plaque buildup in the heart, can also cause plaque buildup in other arteries, in the neck, in the brain, in the legs. I think it's less well studied whether someone with like a genetic risk for coronary disease, does that increase the risk for stroke? Probably a little less well studied there.
Okay. You talked about a little earlier about how much has changed since you were in training and then over these last years that you've been in practice. What breakthroughs have you seen? And then what can we expect in the next 10 years when it comes to heart care, heart health, and genetics too? Like overall, what's your thoughts on what we can expect?
Right. So I think gene therapy is pretty exciting. Mm-hmm. It hasn't really hit forefront in cardiovascular medicine yet. On the other hand, say it was just approved recently, a company called Vertex Pharmaceuticals in conjunction with CRISPR, they actually have gene therapy for sickle cell. And so that's really cool, the fact to be able to go in, edit a gene potentially, and cure a disease. Mm. And so with some of what we've talked about, say, long QT, that arrhythmia where there's defects in either potassium channel or sodium channel, if you could do gene therapy for that and cure patients of long QT, that might prevent them from needing a defibrillator potentially, even save lives. Okay. That's maybe little ways down the road, though. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, I think there is more and more focus on genetic testing and cardiovascular disease for sure.
Okay.
And that's probably going to be more on the sort of polygenic risk score as opposed to like single gene variants. So I do think something along the lines of polygenic risk score where you look at your whole genome and then trying to calculate a risk, you'll be seeing more and more of that as time goes on. And then patients will be integrating that information with their traditional risk factors to try and provide more personalized medicine.
I think this goes back to one of the questions Shanna asked earlier, but changing behaviors is so hard. And so, if you're a patient and you come and you have, whether it's a family history or several of these risk factors, I'm just curious from what you've seen, and you've cared for so many patients, is there one thing in particular that you see that really motivates patients to take the steps that they need and reverse course? What is the thing that you see that really sort of ignites that desire in patients to make a change and maybe get on the path to being healthier in terms of their heart and their lifestyle?
I would say the biggest thing I see to then really motivate patients often is, unfortunately, some kind of cardiac event affecting a loved one, a friend. I get patients coming in, my best friend who's the same age as me just had a heart attack, just needed bypass surgery, just needed a stent. And that really gets them focused on their own cardiovascular risk and potentially mortality. My father, my brother, my sister had some kind of cardiac event. I would say it's really unfortunate, some kind of cardiac event touching someone close to a patient, which is probably a very strong motivator for them to, change their lifestyle if they haven't already.
That's why I think that risk score, whether the way we calculate it today and the way we might be able to calculate it, years from now, knowing that risk and having that conversation with your doctor is important, because there are things that you can do. You've talked about your genetic risk. You can't do that much. Can't do anything about that. And you can take medications. But how much can making the lifestyle changes affect your risk and lower it? Like, we don't talk about that enough, that, yeah, you can take medications and you can not do too much about your genetics, but if you know about it, but lifestyle can really affect your risk.
Oh, for sure. Sure. So, for instance, Cardiac Associates was approached by a small startup company called OpenDNA, and we actually did a pilot project with them on the polygenic risk score a couple years ago. And that was along with a couple other clinical sites. I think one in New Jersey, one in Rockville, a primary care provider. And that was pretty interesting pilot study, because for this company, OpenDNA, we took a cheek swab to get the DNA, and then it was sent off. We got a polygenic risk score. And then, you know, I would go over with the patients their polygenic risk score. So what I would get would be, say, for coronary disease, your genetic risk for coronary disease is in the 90th percentile, which would be very high, more risk than 90% of people out there. Or it could be in the 20th percentile, which actually would be pretty low risk. But then beyond that, you know, patients would then start freaking out if their risk is very high. But then with, say, for, you know, for this company's sort of model, they then would also provide not just genetic risk, but then also your absolute risk at 10 years, and then also lifetime. So someone like that, let's say if you were 50 and you had 90th percentile, they might be very worried. I would then, you know, look and say on that report, it might say your 10-year risk is really, you know, say 7.5%. So that's going to be higher than the average 50-year-old, but it's not like 100% chance of having a heart attack or a stroke in the next 10 years. And then your lifetime risk might be, for instance, 40 or 50%. So point there being, yeah, genetics is definitely part of it, but it's not the only thing, and lifestyle plays a super important role. I mean, if you had to say which one plays, you know, just pick one, genetics or lifestyle, I'd probably go more with lifestyle. I think there's much more you can affect with lifestyle than with genetics.
Okay. Yeah. That's great.
Where would you tell someone to start if they've got a whole checklist of risk factors? Yeah. What are the, you know, top one or two things they can do to reverse course?
Number one would be stop smoking. But fortunately, most of my patients right now are not smoking.
I was going to say, I feel like we say that a lot, but yeah. I rarely see someone smoking anymore.
Yeah. How about vaping?
That's a great
question.
Because
I do feel like I see that more often. The traditional cigarette.
Yeah.
Right. And I would stay away from vaping too.
Yeah.
Probably not as toxic as smoking, but still not good either.
Yeah.
One place I would start probably would be exercise. I mean, love exercise, you know, huge in exercise. And I would say exercise has so many benefits. With exercise, it can help with your blood pressure, regardless of whether you lose weight or not. I mean, let's say even if a patient is exercising, doesn't drop a single pound, their blood pressure will go down just from the fact of exercise. Exercise can help with cholesterol. It just helps with being able to carry on with your activities of daily life, as opposed to some patients, as they get older, become just bound to the chair, to the couch, because they're just not active, not able to get around and do things.
Yeah. So I think people associate exercise with losing weight. And I loved what you said. It's not about that. Yeah. It actually does a whole lot more that you can't see. And that's important to note, I think. I've been trying to exercise more and I'm so proud of myself, but I have not seen a change in the number. And I'm trying to stay motivated, even though I'm not seeing that. And I have to remember, no. Let me go to my physical in a couple months and I'll see my cholesterol levels because they were a little high.
Well, call me. I'll be your buddy.
Oh, yes.
We can do it together.
I love it.
That probably helps, right? keep the motivation up, having an accountability.
Yeah, but I like that. I like it's not the number. It's the overall health, and then it helps you age well.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
And the heart's a muscle, right?
Yeah.
So you have to keep working it out.
Yeah.
Heart's a muscle. And then with exercise, it also releases endorphins, and then people mentally feel better.
Yeah. I love how you were bringing in some of the very interesting things that Cardiac Associates has been participating in, and just your, in the practices, approach to care, and just staying on the forefront of new things and new treatments, and how you've helped Shady Grove and White Oak become very, forefronts in our area with heart care. You've been practicing for a long time. You've been a part of Adventist Healthcare for a long time. to me, that's what makes us special, right? You can get really wonderful care right here in your neighborhood. For you, what's special about being a part of Adventist Healthcare and our system of care?
You kind of started to touch on it. We are the healthcare system that's in your neighborhood. Mm-hmm. You know, we are the doctors, nurses, technicians, mm-hmm. who, you know, maybe your neighbor. For instance, just this past Friday, I was invited to go to my son's high school for where they have a meet a pro day. And so just spent lunchtime with the kids there who were interested in medicine. About 25 kids showed up and, you know, bought them some lunch, and it was in the media center, and just talked to them about what it's like to be a cardiologist. Mm. So it's nice to have that community outreach. And, you know, this is not, say, Johns Hopkins or hospital center where it's some faraway entity. We're mm-hmm. right here in the neighborhood, and yeah. and we're there with you.
And it's, and there's breakthroughs happening, and there's excellent, very high quality care happening right here that you don't have to drive to. You can rely on it.
For sure. Yeah. Yes. So people don't know this, but Shady was probably one of the busiest heart attack centers in the state of Maryland. Mm. Busy ER, and with that, a busy heart attack center. We have very good care for heart attacks at Shady Grove Hospital. At White Oak, the cardiothoracic surgery program has been excellent. Often there's something called the Society for Thoracic Surgeons, and they award programs 1, 2, or 3 stars. And the cardiothoracic surgery program has consistently gotten 3 stars for their top-notch care mm-hmm. in doing surgery there.
Yeah. And minimally invasive surgery, yeah. too.
Minimally invasive, and now yeah. also with what's called TAVRs.
Yeah.
We have a great structural heart team there.
Yeah. So there's really wonderful things going on with heart and just a lot of things at Adventist Healthcare that's really high quality that we continue wanna emphasize.
And truly a prestigious history of cardiac care
yeah.
throughout our system. And you've been an important part of that. So yeah. thank you for your work.
Yeah. Oh, thank you.
Thank you so much.
One last question that we like to ask. You've touched on it a little bit throughout, but what is your one tip for a happy heart, healthy life?
My one tip for a heart, healthy life would be exercise.
Mm-hmm.
And here's a fun little tidbit. So in this coming July, my mom is 80 now, and I mean, I'm 54, but we're going to Des Moines, Iowa to compete in the National Senior Games.
Mm.
So my mom is going to be doing a 5K power walk and also a 1500 meter power walk. And I guess I'll be running a 10K and a 5K race there. And it's kind of interesting the way this happened, because back in, I think it was 2021, a buddy of mine said, hey, you should run the Kentlands and Lakelands 5K. We're close to there, never really ran it. I was never a track runner or anything like that in high school, mm-hmm. but I was just trying to keep in shape. And so I said, all right. And so at that point, I guess I was 50 at that time. So ran the Kentlands 5K, and this is around Labor Day. I actually came in first in my age division.
Congratulations.
Must have been weak competition that day. and so then, maybe 2-3 weeks later, I guess something in the mail, and it's a gift card from Panera. I think maybe $20. I'm like, oh, I actually won something from race. This is pretty cool. It never happened to me before. Then fast forward, like maybe November 2021, get an email. You qualified for the National Senior Games in Fort Lauderdale in 2022 in the spring. I'm like, well, that's cool, but I don't want to be a senior. I'm only 50. I really don't want to be a senior. So I looked into it, and it's actually a lot of people who participate. There's maybe like 10,000 people or so, but these are all kinds of events,
yeah.
track and field, races, walks, basketball, pickleball, tennis, et cetera. And so, yeah, my mom and I, we did it in 2022 in Fort Lauderdale, and usually supposed to be every other year. COVID had screwed that up.
Yeah.
So then it's usually odd years. So in 2023 in Pittsburgh, my mom and I did it again, and got a silver medal. I actually came in second in the 10K, which I was pretty thrilled about.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, now my mom and I were signed up again in 2025, about 3 or 4 months from now.
All right. So we need pictures and we need to congratulate you. So we want to hear how it goes.
Well, I'd say more my mom. I mean,
I love it. That's amazing.
Yeah, for sure. And I love, again, having someone to do it with.
Yeah.
It's a good time with your mother.
For sure.
And I also like the point that, one, you don't have to be an athlete,
yes.
right? You don't have to be competitive. Just find something you like to do
and
get moving
yeah.
and see where it takes you. Yeah. And in your case, it's, you know, it's to high achievement and
yeah.
the senior games.
And it can be little stuff too. You know, it's we're all so busy. And so just fitting in just a little bit and work your way up or just stay with that and you'll see the benefits. It really does work.
Oh, absolutely. I tell patients, oh, you don't have time to exercise. Well, I mean, you can always make time, but I'll say, all right, then, hey, when you drive to the grocery store, park as far away as you can.
Yeah.
Get that walk in.
Yep.
Take the stairs instead of the elevators.
Yep. Just start small. So wonderful. Thank you, Dr. Chen. We want to have you back. You'll come back, right?
Of course.
We'll have you back for sure. Thank you, Tina, for stepping in today. It was lovely having you.
It's always a pleasure.
All right. Well, thank you to our listeners as well. To find out more information about Dr. Chen and Cardiac Associates and our excellent care at Shady Grove Medical Center and White Oak Medical Center, visit AdventistHealthcare.com. You can click on Find a Doctor to search. More information and resources will also be available in today's show notes. We'd also always love to hear from our listeners. You can let us know if you like the podcast by leaving a review. Can like and subscribe us and also email podcast@AdventistHealthcare.com and let us know what other healthcare topics you want to know more about. Thank you and be well.